now allow you time to formulate a question, let me take the chair's prerogative and begin with the first question. I want to pick up with on a comment that the ambassador made, which he referred at the end to financial incentives. And Matt, you talked about a number of targets that different countries were working towards. Professor Chi, you said that China was going to pursue a new industrial production and consumption model, and Dr. Yu spoke about the importance of best practices and partnerships. I'd like to ask you, what does all of this mean in a world where the price of a barrel of oil is in the neighborhood of $100? Is that the kind of market signal that is helpful to achieve what it is that each of you has been talking about, or should we all encourage higher prices for a barrel of oil? Ambassador, you may not want to comment given the election campaign, but who would like to? Their mics at your chair, yes.
Well, I think $100 a barrel is already hurting poor people, and that's not the right solution. Frankly, those who emit more has to do something. So we should be more focused to those who are emitting more. The other problem with $100 a barrel is that the main culprit, which is coal, is not going to be addressed by that, though there may be slight increase in coal prices because of oil price increase, but that's indirect effect. So I would not say $100 a barrel is the right response. But going back to your earlier suggestion regarding technology partnerships, certainly I think people are willing to do that, and as we have heard from both my neighbors here, that it is working.
Matt, do you want to comment?
Yeah. Thank you. I agree with the professor's comment, and I guess two things. One thing is that the developing countries are going to obviously place the priority of their, you know, development needs first. And so the question is, how do we meet the needs of the developing countries, their needs for development in a climate-friendly way? We have to do both things together. You can't do one, you know, without the other. That's not going to be sustainable. So, no, I don't think, you know, encouraging ever higher oil prices is quite the way to do that. It's more a question of, again, adopting policies that can use energy more efficiently and produce reductions, hopefully in the most cost-effective manner. The other thing is, obviously, is volatility and price spikes and resources are not... What we're not talking about, when we look at greenhouse gas reductions, we want to avoid having to do precipitous things, which is basically what oil price increases generally represent. And we want to have time to plan so that we can make sure that we implement the programs properly and in the most effective manner.
This 我们初算了一下，如果能够以住房为例，如果按照美国这样一个住房标准的话，恐怕需要再增加 16个地球。
By consumption model, we are thinking of the size of the population in China, 1.3 billion people. With rapid economic growth, some Chinese people try to follow the life model of the United States. We calculated that if every Chinese would like to have large houses like rich Americans do, then we need altogether 16 Earths.
所以这个中国有一个现在我们产业结构的调整，因为我们的第三服务业产业比重比较低。 第二，增长方式当中呢，这个跟产业结构相比呢，我们主要的要转移到以扩大服务业来。第三，就是说从中国的实际出发，比如说我们现在住房严格限制，城市里面基本上不再批建别墅，所以这个产业结构、增长方式、消费方式。 必须适应这种环境气候变化这样一个大的趋势。
So more about consumption model. For instance, the Chinese government has made a decision that no single villa will be constructed in the future in urban areas, no matter how rich you are, no matter how much you would like to pay. And for the industrial structure, we mean by industrial structure, we mean that if you look at the proportions among the tertiary industry, primary industry, and secondary industry, you will find that the tertiary industry takes too small a proportion. So we would like to make more efforts to develop the tertiary industry in order to save demand of resources and demand of energy. And this is what we mean by transformation of the economic development model and creation of a new consumption model.
Thank you very much. Let's go to the audience for questions. Yes, sir. And we're going to wrap up pretty close to 3:30 and keep you on time for the tea break.
A question for Jan, just regarding the coal and aluminium sequestration jobs you've been working on. When do you see them coming commercially online and being commercially viable?
I'm sure there's any number of people in this room who are even more expert than I, but what I do know is that if we don't do the work now while we're still at the demonstration phase of working with the major emerging economies in the region of making sure that the technologies are going to be appropriate and applicable in the fast-growing economies, then that will be a really lost opportunity. I think, you know, the SARO people can give you estimates on post-combustion capture applicability. When that will be, you know, commercially available. There's different estimates. But the perfluorocarbon example, that's current technology. That's technology that's here and now. That's not futuristic. So I think that there's a range of things that we're trying to do in the partnership, from both making existing practices and technology more widespread at the current moment, as well as pooling efforts on getting the demonstrations of emerging technologies happening in the places where they need to happen.